14 and a bit years ago, I became a reed, all right? And it was a good day, and it was a great day, actually. And for the first time, I met Matt's extended family. And after the last 14 years, I realized why he left it till our wedding day for me to meet his extended family. They're absolutely lovely, but quite loud and quite eccentric. And they're absolutely fab. But this is what I found out about the Reeds. The Reeds love to tell stories, like about anything. But they love to tell stories. And once a year, we get a chance to get together as cousins and wider family. And now our kids, the next generation, are all coming up. And we all go camping somewhere. Since I've joined, they have to have electric hookup. All right, and so we kind of go a bit more glamping now. And then some of the others had children and they realized I was right. And so we go and have this camping trip once a year for a weekend. And we kind of descend on this poor campsite. And there's like other people wanting to camp there as well. And, you know, I spend the time praying for them because we're not the quietest family in the world, which is quite good, really, because I joined it and I'm not the quietest person in the world. I don't know if you've noticed that. But every year we get together and this is what happens at the Cousins Weekend. Every year we usually have the same food. Okay, so someone will bring the chili or the spaghetti bolognese, okay? For quite a few years, we brought the barbecue for the Friday night. And there used to be like, you know, 10 or 12 little kind of throwaway barbecues all in a row. And Matt would be like, you know, cooking all the stuff on that. That was our contribution. And the kind of weekend always runs the same. So they play a game called Perudo, and they have this Perudo challenge with a cup and everything, and your name gets put on it, and all of that. I still haven't figured out how to play Perudo, so I have no chance. And so we have this weekend, and one thing that I've found is it's a time when they get together and they reminisce. The thing is that they reminisce about the same things every time we get together. So we get together and the same stories come out. And, you know, the camping trips from when they were younger and what happened and the breakfasts that my mother-in-law used to make and all of that kind of stuff. And the same stories come out. And so what we've realized, me and the other people that have married into the clan, okay, is that we've realized that some of the stories we could probably tell as well as the actual Reed Penn cousins, even though we were never there. So we could tell the stories exactly the same. And usually the stories revolve around camping trips that they had. And especially stories around Matt's Uncle Martin and his Auntie Jenny, who both passed away before I even was dating Matt or married to Matt. And I never got the chance to meet them. And the other week, I was sat kind of flicking through Facebook and Caitlin was sat next to me. So I'm very, very careful, scroll quickly. And she just kind of looked at me, she went, "Mummy, why is Grandpa on Facebook?" And I was like, "What?" Okay, so we kind of flipped back. She went, "There he is." I'm like, "Sweetheart, that's not Grandpa." She says, "Mummy, who is that?" I says, "That's Uncle Teen or Uncle Martin, Matt's Uncle Martin." I said, "That's your great Uncle Teen." She said, "Who's that?" I said, "That's Grandpa's brother." She says, "What was he like?" And actually, from being on the camp with the Reeds and the Pens, I was able to actually tell Caitlin what this man, who I've never met, was like. Because every single year for the last 14 years, we've gone to the Reeds cousins and they have told exactly the same stories about this man. And it was almost like I could then kind of, you know, tell them to her, even though I'd never been there, I'd never met him. But from the stories that they have told, I got a picture of what this man was like. And I was able to message, Matt's cousin had put this picture on Facebook, and I was able to message James and just say, "Caitlin just thought it was her grandpa." And I think they put the photograph up there on the anniversary of Uncle Teen's death. And I was able to say, you know, "Caitlin thought it was grandpa." And we had a great talk about your dad and about what he was like and all of that kind of stuff. You see, the thing is, when you hear stories about someone often enough, you get to know what they're like. Ever realize that? When you hear stories about someone, you might meet someone. I can remember when I met Alan and Penny, okay, Jill's brother and his wife came up and they came into church and I met them for the first time and I gave them a hug. I said, "It's like I've known you for years." Because we'd sat and we'd talked and I'd heard about them and they'd heard about me. And so when we actually met, we had loads to talk about because we almost felt like we already knew each other. You see, you can get to know a lot about someone through the stories that are told about them. And this next few weeks, months, however long it takes, we're looking at the whole thing of looking at the stories of Jesus. It's called Tell Me the Stories of Jesus. And this week, I want to talk to you about the fact that Jesus's character is in the detail of every story that he's told about him. So it's not just what he did, but who he is shines through. Who he is shines through. And so this week, I want to look at one story about Jesus, and I want to look at three aspects of Jesus's character that I think shine through in this story. You see, I've never met Matt's uncle. I've never met his auntie, but actually I could tell stories about them. I could tell you what I think they were like because of the stories I have heard about them. I've never met them, but I can tell you what I think they would be like. And I think I would probably get quite close. Partly because I know my father-in-law so well, okay? And there's a lot of family traits in the Reed family, okay? It's like they're all quite similar. And I've met, you know, I've met Uncle Martin's kids and I've met Auntie Jenny's kids, and I could probably tell you a little bit about what they're like because of the stories that I've heard about them. And so this week we're going to pick up in Mark's Gospel in chapter 5. And if you've got your Bibles with you, I'm reading from the NIV version. We're going to read the first 20 verses of chapter 5, this story about Jesus. And then we're going to look at three things that I think it shows us about him and how that can affect us today. It says this: then they went across the lake, this is Jesus and his disciples, to the region of the Gerasenes. When Jesus got out of the boat, a man with an evil spirit came from the tombs to meet him. This man lived in the tombs and no one could bind him anymore, not even with a chain, for he had often been chained hand and foot, but he tore the chains apart and broke the irons on his feet. No one was strong enough to subdue him. Night and day among the tombs in the hills, he would cry out and cut himself with stones. When he saw Jesus from a distance, he ran and fell on his knees in front of him. He shouted at the top of his voice, "What do you want with me? Jesus, Son of the Most High God, swear to God that you won't torture me." For Jesus had said to him, "Come out of this man, you evil spirit." Then Jesus asked him, "What is your name?" "My name is Legion," he replied, "for we are many." And he begged Jesus again and again not to send them out of the area. A large herd of pigs was feeding on the nearby hillside. The demons begged Jesus, "Send us among the pigs, allow us to go into them." He gave them permission and the evil spirits came out and went into the pigs. The herd, about 2,000 in number, rushed down the steep bank into the lake and they were drowned. Those tending the pigs ran off and reported this in the town and the countryside, and the people went to see what had happened. When they came to Jesus, they saw the man who had been possessed by the legion of demons sitting there, dressed and in his right mind. And they were afraid. Those who had seen it told the people what had happened to the demon-possessed man and told about the pigs as well. Then the people began to plead with Jesus to leave their region. As Jesus was getting into the boat, the man who had been demon-possessed begged to go with him. Jesus did not let him, but said, "Go home to your family and tell them how much the Lord has done for you and how he has had mercy on you." So the man went away and began to tell the Decapolis how much Jesus had done for him, and all the people were amazed. I just want to look at a bit of the detail of that story for a few moments, if that's okay, and just explain some of it to you before I get into the main kind of points of what I want to say to you this morning. So the first thing is this, that kind of bit where it says this man lived in the tombs. And I was kind of reading up about this and kind of looking at it. And we're told that the poor and the ill, okay, often would go and live in the caves where people were buried. Okay, so they would go and they would live and get shelter in the caves that were already had people who had died in them. Okay, they were cut off from society, they were cut off from everyone, and they would go and they would live in these caves. So when it talks about that he came from the tombs, that he lived in the tombs, it will show his lowliness and his status in life. This man was considered the lowest of the low, and he lived in a tomb with corpses. No one wanted to know him, no one wanted to be around him, no one wanted anything to do with him. And we're told that because of where he lived. He didn't live in the town with everybody else. He didn't live in community. He lived by himself. No one would visit it. In fact, we're shown that people who used to try and visit and try to bind him, because what they did didn't work, they just left him. And they would have left him there thinking at some point he will die as well. At some point he will be no more and that will be okay. But he lived in the tombs because of his possession, because of the way that his mind worked, because of the way that life had treated him. He ended up living isolated in basically someone else's grave. Not a nice way to live, really, is it? If we're honest, you can talk back. When it says, when Jesus said to the demons, "Have you got a name?" And they said, "We are Legion." The people around would have understood that name. And the man himself would have understood that name because that name is derived from Romans. And a Roman legion was a band of men. Around 6,000 men were considered a legion. So this tells us how oppressed this man was. Right. When he says we are many, maybe our mind goes to 20 or 30. But actually, when he says my name is Legion, what he was saying is there are so many of us. You're going to be overpowered by this. There are so many of us, okay? If a Roman legion was 6,000 men, that is pretty much what they're saying about the demons that this man was possessed by. And the third thing is simply this, that this man lived in a Gentile territory. So Jesus wasn't coming here to the Jews. He wasn't coming here to God's people, if you like. He was going to people that had very little knowledge of who he was. Had very little knowledge of God, had very little knowledge of faith, and he was going to minister to those people. So Jesus went to the place that no one else would go, ministered to the people that no one else would minister to, okay, and was stronger than anything else that they had ever tried. And so that is kind of the background to the story. That is kind of what Jesus entered into. And like I said at the beginning, I think when you hear stories about people, you can grasp what they're like from the stories that you hear. And so we're going to try and grasp three things about Jesus this morning, about what he is like from the story that we've just read. I don't know about you, maybe you've been in church a long time, maybe you've read this story many times, as I have, and I was reading it this week going, God, what does this say about who you are? Jesus, what does this say about you? And I came up with three things. Number one, are we ready for these? Yeah. Because actually these may have applied back in Matthew chapter 5, but they still apply today. Number one, Jesus is strong. Right. Jesus is strong. Psalm 68, verse 28, talking of God, but God the Father, God the Son, God the Holy Spirit are one person, says this, summon your power, God. Show us your strength, our God, as you have done before. Psalm 46, verse 1, we read it this morning. God is our refuge and he is our strength. Yeah. An ever-present help in time of trouble. Jesus here dealt with what no one else was able to deal with. What is it says in Mark 5? No one was strong enough to subdue him. Yeah. You see, the difference between Jesus and everyone else and his strength is his strength didn't come to subdue him. His strength came to bring him freedom. His strength wasn't just about changing his behavior. His strength was about changing him. And so this morning, I want to put it to you that actually from this story, we can get that one of Jesus's characteristics is that he is strong enough to deal with what no one else can deal with. He is strong enough to do that. He is strong enough to deal with the things in our lives that no one else can deal with. This story of Jesus shows his strength, shows that he was stronger than other authorities on earth, and shows that his strength was more about healing than about subduing. Because we're not told that Jesus went and bound him. We're not told that Jesus went and subdued his behavior. We're told that Jesus went and set him free. We're told that Jesus went and dealt with the stuff. That he went and he didn't try chaining him up. He dressed him. He saw him get set free. And so this morning, I want to say to you that from this story, we can get for in our lives that Jesus is strong. He's strong enough for your situation this morning. He's strong enough for my situation this morning. Other powers on this earth will go straight to subduing what they see as wrong, whereas Jesus wants healing first and foremost. In this world, we'll go to try and put in behavior right and all of that. But Jesus didn't do that. Jesus just went to heal the guy. Yeah. He just went to set him free. He went to deal with the root of the cause. This man had been like this for a long time. Verse 3 says this, no one could deal with him anymore. Which tells me that there was a time where people could deal with him. But all of a sudden, this thing got too strong. All of a sudden, this oppression got too strong, and the people who could deal with him before could no longer deal with him now. You see, what isn't dealt within us properly will only get stronger. When things start in as small, if we don't deal with it properly, all that will happen is it will get stronger. So maybe if this man had met Jesus a few years back, where this thing hadn't totally overtaken his world and overtaken his life, maybe, you know, if Jesus had have met him then, what was in him wouldn't have been allowed to grow to the strength that it had grown to. I want to really challenge us this morning. Do we want to give Jesus the kind of areas of our lives that we go, it's okay if you sort them out, but don't touch this? Because what we hold on to that is not right in our lives will only get stronger if we don't deal with it. And if we don't allow Jesus, who is stronger than anything that can come against us, to come in and help us, if we don't allow him to come in and help us, what is inside us will grow. What is inside us will get stronger. What is inside us will begin to overtake us. Jesus didn't deal with the out of control symptoms. He dealt with what was at the root of this man's problems. And we spend all our time today trying to deal with the behavior that comes out from what is wrong within. And actually what Jesus is saying is, I'm strong enough to deal with what's on the inside, not just with what's on the outside. Because if you let me deal with what's on the inside, your behavior on the outside is going to change anyway. Yeah. I want to tell you this morning, Generations Church, that Jesus is strong enough. Strong enough for whatever is in you, for whatever is in our community, for whatever is in, you know, the world in which we live. Jesus is actually strong enough to deal with the root cause. Yeah. Jesus just dealing with the symptoms won't make the issue, just dealing with the symptoms won't make the issue go away. It will just hide how deeply it has got us. Dealing with the symptoms is not going to deal with the issue. It might help us, and I'm not saying that that is always wrong. Hear my heart here. I'm saying that there is a God who can deal with all of it. Because actually sometimes learning, even when things are still, even when we're still struggling on the inside, learning how to behave well on the outside is a good thing. What's not a good thing is when that's all we do. Because we've got a God this morning who is strong enough to deal with all of it. Today, Jesus is still strong enough to deal with the root of the things that are in our lives. He doesn't just want to bind up the behavior, but he wants to heal the rooted problem that we have. Whatever those things may be, whether it's our guilt, whether it's our shame, whether it's offense, whatever those things might be, he wants to deal with the root of the problem, not just with the behaviors that come from it. So the first thing that I learned as I read this is that Jesus was stronger than anybody else was at that time. Because everyone else had tried and failed. Yet Jesus came along. And however long he spent with him, a few hours, a few minutes, we're not told. Jesus came along and this man was completely set free. He didn't come to subdue him. He came to heal him. So Jesus is strong. Number two, Jesus is compassionate. Psalm 103 verse 4 says this, it's he who redeems your life from the pit and crowns you with love and compassion. Psalm 145 verse 9, the Lord is good to all. He has compassion on all he has made. This doesn't make Jesus weak. In fact, his compassion comes from his strength. Yeah. I think compassion comes from strength. It doesn't come out of weakness. Verse 5, this struck me this week, and I've read this story many times, but this struck me this week as I was reading it. It says this, night and day, among the tombs and in the hills, he would cry out and cut himself with stones. Jesus' compassion took him beyond the appearance of this man to hearing his cries. How often do we respond to how somebody comes at us? You know, or how someone looks, or what they're saying, or what they're doing, and our response comes from that. Jesus went beyond that, and he heard his cry. He didn't just listen to what came out of his mouth, he heard what came out of his heart. And somehow, and I know that Jesus was fully God as well as fully man. But somehow his time with God allowed him to be sensitive enough to this man to not just look at what everybody else looked at, but his compassion heard the man's cries. Not just the ones from his mouth, but the ones from his heart. When was the last time you went beyond someone's appearance, what somebody was saying, what somebody was doing, and you began to hear their cry? Because everybody's got a cry. Everybody's got those things that kind of, you know, affect us when we're alone, affect us when we're sitting down and there's nothing else around us. We've all got those things. How often do we respond to that within one another? Because sometimes what's going on inside of us comes out in how we respond to other people and in how we might speak to other people. And I want to say, let's learn, generations, to look beyond what people are saying, look beyond how they're behaving sometimes, and look to what you think the cry of their heart might be. Right. I was so challenged when I read this. Night and day, this man would sit crying. This man would cry out to God. How many people in our community are like that? They might not know that they're crying out to God. They might not know it's God that they're crying out to, but it is. And we've got to be people who allow the compassion of God to work through us so we go beyond what someone's saying, what they look like, what they're doing. So we hear the cry that they've got. So we hear those lonely cries. So we hear those cries of, I'm not good enough, those cries of shame, those cries of guilt, those cries of, God, are you really there? Throughout this week, I've been reading loads of stuff that Kay and Rick Warren have brought out to just to do with mental health within the church and all that kind of stuff. And I was listening to a conversation between Kay Warren and Sheila Walsh earlier this week. And I put it up on my Facebook if any of you managed to kind of listen to it. And I can remember growing up and like Sheila Walsh was like one of my heroes. She used to be on something called the Rock Gospel Show. Okay, years ago. I don't know if anyone ever watched it, or I'm showing my age now, with a guy called Alvin Stardust, all right? And so I used to tune in on a Sunday night when I'd get home from church, and it was like the Christian version of Top of the Pops. Wasn't quite as cool, okay? But they used to have like loads of singing artists on and groups and all that kind of stuff. And I used to tune in avidly every week. And I thought she was like one of the coolest people ever. And then she kind of, it all went quiet for a bit. I had loads of her albums and stuff like that. I used to sing loads of her songs. And I used to listen to her all the time. And I listened to her talk this week and she ended up moving to America. And she was doing some TV stuff out there and recording loads of stuff. And then at one point in her life, she ended up on a psych ward in this hospital. And she'd been struggling for a really long time. And just the enemy said, you know, you're a Christian. You shouldn't be struggling with that kind of stuff. And she was struggling with depression and suicidal thoughts and all of that kind of stuff. And she said that she got into this psych ward and she just felt totally alone and totally like, you know, God can't use me now because of where I am and the shame and everything that came on her. And she said, this is what helped her get free. And these are her words that she said. She says this, that God doesn't care about me being good enough. He just loves me. I love that. God doesn't care about me being good enough. He doesn't care that I'm in this. He does care about me, but in the sense that he doesn't care whether, you know, I'm well or whether I'm not. He just loves me. What I place on as the most important thing in my life that I can come across as being okay and being fine, God's not interested in. He actually hears my cry, not just what's coming out of my mouth. Right. He actually hears my cry. And she said that she was sat there and he said, Sheila, being good enough is not what counts. Me loving you is what counts. And I want to say to us this morning, maybe some of us are sitting in here this morning and we might look one way on the outside, but we know that there's a cry in our heart for God to come and rescue us and for God to come and do something in us. You know, we live in a society. I was struck by this, you know, being a youth worker and all that kind of stuff, looking at the whole issues of self-harm and all that kind of stuff. Do you know what? It's not a new thing. Because what this guy was doing was simply what people all over our world today are doing. They're crying out. They're crying out. They want to control things in their life. And a lot of the time we see what is on the outside. But sometimes, church, we've got to go beyond that. We've got to have enough compassion to hear the cries, not just to see what's on the outside of someone. Eventually, Sheila Walsh moved forward and God saw beyond her broken state. He heard her deep cries and he brought her healing and gave her a future. But her story is so familiar. Her story is not a story that we go, oh, a Christian feels like that. Do you know what? This morning, we've got to get rid of that I'm okay Christian thing. And that, how can God be in my life when I'm feeling like this? Do you know what? Sometimes there are deep cries in our hearts and deep cries in our life. And God's compassion still sees beyond to our deep cry. Do you know what? God heard the last time that you cried. Whether any other human being heard it or not, he did. God heard the last time where you were saying, God, this is how I look, but this is how I'm feeling. Those secret things in you, those things in your heart where you go, God, how can I say I love you and yet be feeling like this? Do you know what? He hears your cry. He's compassionate and strong enough to deal with it with you.
That's right.
He is compassionate enough and he is strong enough to help you and to help me. You see what God's done? In this day, God sent Jesus to this man. Do you know who God sends to our community today? Us. That work colleague that's sitting next to you, that schoolmate that's struggling, that family member who doesn't know where to turn. God's put you there. And he's put me there. And my prayer is that we will say, God, show us your strength, give us your compassion, and let us go and see beyond what people are putting on the outside. See beyond maybe some of the times where people tell you to get lost, to go away. See beyond that. And actually, God, let your compassion work through us so we don't just hear the cry from their mouth, we hear the cry from their heart. A lot of the time we walk away from stuff because people say things to us that we don't like, that offend us when we try and help. Do you know what? Maybe we just need to go a bit beyond that. Maybe we need to grow. We need to have a soft heart, but maybe some of us need a bit of a thicker skin. That we can actually go beyond that and go, actually, we're going to listen to the cry of your heart, not just what's coming out of your mouth.
Yeah.
And allow God's compassion to work through us. This man had been crying out for years. And finally, Jesus rocked up. Finally, the one who could help him came. Do you know what? Jesus is here. He's inside of each one of us. So maybe for someone in your world, Jesus is finally getting ready to show up because we're finally going to be filled with his compassion and his strength. And we're going to go and we're going to do what only he can do through us. So Jesus is compassionate. The third thing I learn about Jesus, and I love this as I read it, in fact, it brought me to tears, is that Jesus was the finisher. I couldn't think of a really cool word, so I just put it down as I thought it. Okay, Jesus was a finisher. Let me kind of expand on that a little bit. Philippians 1 verse 6 saying this, that we're to be confident of this, that he who began a good work in you will carry it on to completion until the day of Christ Jesus. I love this verse in Mark 5, and I've just got to try and find it. Verse 15 says this, when they came to Jesus, that's the people who had run into the town because they'd seen the pigs get killed. When they came to Jesus, they saw the man who had been possessed by the legion of demons sitting there dressed and in his right mind, and they were afraid. I love this verse. When the others came back and saw the man, Mark tells us about, he tells us that he was sitting up, he was dressed, he was in his right mind, and he was free. You see, Jesus doesn't do half a job. He healed the man, and then I love this, and he waited for everyone else to come back so he could explain it.
Yeah.
He didn't leave the man there to do it all himself. Jesus sat with him. Jesus was busy. Jesus could have gone, you got your healing, see you later. Got in the boat and took his disciples somewhere else. But Jesus didn't do that. Jesus sat with him. Jesus waited with him. Jesus knew that there would be comeback for what he had done. And so he waited with the man. But as he waited with him, we're told that people found the man dressed, which tells us that they would have probably found him in another state earlier on. Okay, they found him dressed, they found him sat up, and they found him in his right mind. So often, we can walk away at half a job, but Jesus doesn't do that. He's a finisher. Yeah. He completes what he starts in us. You know, he completes the stuff that he started to do in us. He spoke to those people who were concerned about the pigs. He spoke to those who were scared by what had happened. So the man didn't need to do that. He didn't leave him to kind of deal with it all. I love that about Jesus. Jesus dealt with it because he finishes what he starts. I don't know about you, but I have this thing of like when it comes to that time of year of cleaning out the kids' room. So I go up and I make a start and there is stuff just everywhere. I mean, there's stuff everywhere before I go in because my kids are not the neatest, but there's just stuff everywhere. I'm probably about an hour or two into it. I'll sit in the middle of the room and go, why have I started this? Anyone else there? Why did I think this was a good idea on my day off? And I'll be sitting in the middle of the mess and in the stuff that I found under Oliver's bed. I am dreading the teenage years and just kind of, you know, pulling this stuff out. And I'll be sat just in the middle of these kind of stuff all around me. And I know that I've got to find somewhere to put all this stuff. And I sit there and go, why did I start this? I don't think God's like that. I don't think when he sits with me, with all my mess around me and all my stuff around me, I don't think God sits there and goes, why did I start this? Why did I save this girl? Why did we start this journey? Why didn't I just leave her in a sin? Why didn't I just leave her to get on with those things that have been in her life that are wrong? Why she was doing okay. Why didn't I just leave her? Because God never does half a job. And he sits with us and goes, come on. He applauds us all the way along. And he just says to us, you're doing good. You're doing good. We might be hitting a few bumps in the road. There may be a bit of mess around you right now. You may be sitting in this heap of stuff, but come on, you can do it. Because I never start something that I'm not able to finish. Jesus was a finisher. Yeah. He was strong. He was compassionate and he was a finisher. Do you know what, church? We can't quit on the people that God has entrusted us with. We've got to keep going with them. We can't quit on the people that God has placed into our world. We've got to keep going. Now, sometimes God says, actually, why don't you pair up with someone else? And why don't you get someone else to help you with this? That's fine. Sometimes God says, actually, why don't you take a step back right now and allow this to happen? That is okay. But what we should never do is stop listening to their cries and decide we're not going to finish what God gave us in the first place. Yeah. Jesus was a finisher. So this morning, just bringing everything, wrapping everything up this morning. I have a challenge for us this week. Are you up to this? It's all right. It's not praying and fasting, okay? This week, why not think on these three things that I've talked about this morning? Why not ask God to grow them in you? Because as Christ followers, the one thing we're meant to be is becoming more like Christ. I don't know about you, sometimes I'm not very good at that. Sometimes my compassion leaves a lot to be desired. But this morning, why not think on these three things and ask God to begin to grow them in you? The characteristics that were in Jesus should be what is growing in you and I. So this week, why not ask God for the strength that was in Jesus? Isaiah 40:29 says this, he gives strength to the weary and he increases the power of the weak. The same strength that Jesus had is offered to us. It's the strength that will go beyond the natural and show the power of God to a hurting world. Why don't we begin to say, come on, God, put some of that strength in me this week. Why don't we begin to say, God, let me grow in the area of compassion. Do you know what? The compassion of Jesus will take you places others won't go. and see the miracles that others will never experience. We need to learn to listen to people's hearts, not their mouths, because their mouths often don't tell the truth. Their mouths either want to push you away or cover up what's going on. Sometimes we've got to hear beyond that and allow the compassion of Jesus to help us hear people's heart. Yeah. And the last thing is, Jesus was a finisher. Who have you decided to quit on? Who have you decided in your heart, or you're responding wrongly to? Maybe take another look. Maybe have a conversation with Jesus about it this week and allow him to move your heart again. Allow compassion to help you hear the cries of the heart rather than of the mouth. Yeah. Do you know what? We often walk away because others push us away with their words. This week, don't listen to the mouth. Ask God to help you listen to the heart. Right. The same characteristics that are in Jesus are meant to grow in those who follow him. Yeah. So this week, I want to say to you, you are strong. In God, yes, but you are strong. The same power that raised Christ from the dead is living and active in those who believe, we're told in the New Testament. This week, you are compassionate. Allow that to grow in you and come out of you. And this week, you are someone who will finish what God has given you. Why not allow that challenge? It challenges me that. Why not allow that challenge to grow inside of you this week?